Hopefully you detected the theme going on between our first reading and gospel today of water. Water was vital in the time of Jesus, even more than it is in our time. We have indoor plumbing and usually ready access to even public fountains. But in the time of Jesus, there was not this convenience. And so locating a well for your town or a local spring or some source of water was very essential. In fact, it became a cultural center for the people. In fact, many times in Scripture throughout the Old Testament, many of the great figures in the Old Testament would meet their wives at the local well. And probably not much has changed. Some of you met your wives at the local watering hole too. Jesus is not just meeting this woman by chance at a well. As the well was the source of life for the community of Samaritans in this town, Jesus is trying to convey to this woman that he is the source of life for the people in this town. Like many things in this world, God is trying to translate something physical into something spiritual to help us understand what we really need. And even isn't this what Lent's about? We give up our chocolate or TV or our snacking to translate something physical into something spiritual. God is constantly trying to do this in our lives. And that is why Jesus sometimes allows us to thirst. Now, for most of us, we don't actually have to thirst for water. Most of us don't have to worry about food. But we all thirst for something, other resources that we consider essential. But what is truly essential for our lives? This interaction that Jesus has with the woman at the well speaks to this point today. Number one, what issue, after asking for some water, does Jesus address with the woman at the well? Her relationships. Her relationships. And again, not much has changed in 2,000 years. We continue to try to find solace and comfort in relationships. He says to her, "You have had 5 husbands, and the one you're living with right now is not your husband." Ladies, the surest way to screw up a relationship is by moving in with a man before you are married. Now, a lot of people will use reason within their head to tell themselves that it's a good idea. Maybe they've seen divorce in their family, and they don't want that to happen to them, so they think, you know, I'll move in with this guy, we'll see if it'll work, and then we'll get married. That actually makes you twice as likely to get divorced. While that may seem a reasonable expectation, it simply doesn't work. Some of us want to try it out. How many of you want to be tried out, ladies? Versus loved, completely, unconditionally, for the rest of your lives. You already have a 50 to 60% chance of being divorced in this country. Do you want to double it? When I have couples come in for marriage preparation, most of them these days are living together. Some of them have children too, which complicates that dynamic. But I ask them, what kind of success rate do you want for your marriage? Of course, they all answer, we want a high degree of success, right? We want a good percentage. But by making that decision to try to find solace in the opposite sex, and this is true not just for our ladies, but for our men too, that we try to find that which is essential. We try to satisfy that thirsting, that hunger, that yearning with the opposite sex. It's not going to work. Because God made you for more than that. Can it speak to that? Can it be part of it? Can it be part of God's plan? Yes. But not because it satisfies something for you, but because you have a relationship with God that empowers you to give something to the other person, not take it. The only relationship that truly will satisfy you is a relationship with Jesus Christ, because he's the only one who saves you. Notice after addressing this woman's relationships, she immediately moves into talking about religion with Jesus, and notice that she's the one who brings it up. There's this debate between them, and she's well aware of it, that Jesus is a Jew, and Jewish people believe that the center of worship is in Jerusalem, where the temple is. But the Samaritans, many years before, had broken off from the Jewish community in Jerusalem and set up their own house of worship in the northern kingdom. It's kind of analogous in modern days to Catholicism and Protestantism. They stem from the same place, but one has the whole package, the full teaching. One has broken away. So why is this issue of religion brought up? Well, like water, believe it or not, religion is essential to our lives. And many of you know people in your lives who say that religion is not essential to their lives. People will say, I'm spiritual, but not religious. There's a gentleman 5 or so years ago who came out with a video, said, why I love Jesus and hate religion. But what does Jesus say to this woman? Salvation is from the Jews. And Jesus would very clearly then hand off that responsibility to the early Catholic Church. You know, people who don't like organized religion, or who want to be spiritual but not religious, or who want to only be religious to a certain extent, like attending Sunday Mass and I'll obey the Ten Commandments, but that's where I draw the line. The real problem is that we don't want to change, because organized religion preaches faithfully the gospel. And when we hear the gospel faithfully preached, it makes us feel uncomfortable, because we know there's things in our lives that need to change. Like the fact that we only come to Mass on Sunday, that we really do the minimum amount that our faith requires. Does that make you feel uncomfortable? Good. That's your conscience. Listen to it. You see, the real problem with saying that we're spiritual but not religious, or saying that, you know, we can do what we want to in regards to religion, is we set up ourselves as our own pope. We set up ourselves as our own authority. And this is one of the woman's problems in our gospel today, both in her relationships and in her religion. She sets herself up as her own authority. Why? Because she's given herself permission to live with a man outside of marriage. She says, it's okay for me. She's given herself permission to practice this Samaritan religion, which is not true. She says, it's okay for me. How many of us fall to that same error of saying, it's okay for me? We set up ourselves as our own authority instead of letting God and the religion that he established be our authority. What is essential to nourish us? What do we really thirst for? Conversion to the truth. And we see that happening with the woman at the well today. You know, over and over throughout the Gospels, people follow Jesus in droves, in crowds. You remember some of the stories where they follow him. There's so many people where he has to get in a boat, right, and preach from the shore because they're pressing in on him. There's people who, you know, are following him and touching him. And like the woman who was healed of her hemorrhage, he says, who touched me? And his disciples are like, are you kidding me? There's people all around you touching you. Moms with kids, you can understand. Jesus is constantly being mobbed by people. But remember what he says after feeding the multitude. He's got this giant group of people following after he's divided the loaves and the fishes and worked a miracle. And he says, you know what? You're not following me because you saw this miracle. You're following me because your bellies are full. How many of us follow Jesus for the same reason? We follow him because some earthly need is met, or he satiates some pain for us, which he should. But how many of us are following him for the right reasons? Notice that the woman at the well starts by responding to Jesus looking for the same thing. She wants water. And Jesus offers living water. Basically, and by living, he means this constant flow of water. In other words, Jesus is offering this woman indoor plumbing. And she says, please, Lord, give this to me always. And he responds by saying, if you knew the gift that was with you. You see, Jesus wants more for you than indoor plumbing. He wants more for you than just giving you the things that meet your needs in this world. He does want that. But he wants so much more for you. Jesus confronts this woman with her sins. And what's interesting is she goes into town, rounds a bunch of people up and says, hey, come see this guy who knows all of my sins. I mean, how many of you have done that before? How many of you would do that? None of us. And yet the truth speaks to her heart so powerfully that she wants to tell everybody about it. And brothers and sisters, that's the goal of the Christian life for each of you. That God does something for you, not just in this world, not just in the material world, not just in the physical, but does something for your soul that converts you and makes you want to tell everybody about it. You know, we all are made to live in this world for a time. And so a lot of our primary concerns are our job and having enough money, having a good house or a decent car. But what do we really need? The people who are going to heaven in droves are the poor, the ignorant, those who are looked upon in this world as being somewhat worthless sometimes, unfortunately. So when you thirst and you hunger and you experience need and you wonder, how am I going to pay the bills this month? Or I want a better job. Remember that Jesus is trying to do the same thing he was doing 2,000 years ago, and that is translate a physical yearning into one that is spiritual. To get you to recognize that your real need is not in this world, but for the world to come. And deep down, each one of us is thirsting for a relationship with him. One that is defined and governed by our religion and that causes us conversion. What is your well? The well is the place you go to when you thirst. What is your well? Is it a video game? Is it spending? Is it a relationship? Food? Drink? Tobacco? Or is your well Jesus Christ? Because he is the only one who can truly satisfy.